America. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today's Monday, April the 3rd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris concludes her tour of Africa.
What Kamala Harris's trip has done is to basically bring to the fore America's involvement on the continent and the extent to which this engagement has been able to benefit the people of Africa.
Sudan's military leaders and pro-democracy groups failed to sign a political agreement to bring about a civilian government. More than 1,000 people fleeing militant attacks in Burkina Faso seek refuge in Ghana. Liberia's Elections Commission chair says voter registration is progressing despite some challenges. Kenyan opposition leader Raila Odinga suspends anti-government protest temporarily.
Mr. Ruto has asked me and as mayor to enter into a constitutional, open-ended and binding dialogue with his government to find a resolution to the issues that we in Azimio have raised about the last year's election.
And women bloggers in the DRC fight online harassment. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris has concluded her week-long visit to Ghana, Tanzania, and Zambia, where she reiterated Washington's commitment to strengthening cooperation with African countries. Kathy Short reports from Lusaka, Zambia.
U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris is the latest high-profile U.S. official to visit the African continent as part of President Joe Biden's commitment to expand its partnership with African countries to meet shared challenges and opportunities. The three nations she's visited each had particular ties with the U.S., Ghana being a long-standing democracy and partner with Washington. Zambia and Tanzania have seen an upward trajectory in democratic governance. In her message to the continent, Harris emphasized the need for the U.S. and Africa to build close ties on areas of mutual interest.
The relationship between the United States and this continent and African leaders is an important one. There's a historical basis for the relationship, not to mention as we look forward, as all governments should, and recognize the unachieved, as of yet, opportunities that exist going forward.
Ngosa Chisupa is a Zambian governance expert who says Harris' visit demonstrates U.S. commitment to strengthening democracy in Africa. Chisupa says the U.S. has been very instrumental in bilateral support to Zambia since 1964.
The fact that Zambia co-hosted the Democracy Summit also highlighted the importance that Zambia is being regarded within the global group of nations. Whilst in Zambia, for Madame Kamala Harris, this visit, I think, meant more to her because of the events that happened 55 years ago when she actually came to visit her then maternal grandfather, Mr. P.V. Gopalan.
Harris' grandfather was a diplomat at the time. Political analyst Boniface Chembe says the visit is important for Africa-U.S. ties, in part because she came with pledges of billions of dollars of public and private aid. The aid will be for issues such as climate change mitigation and youth empowerment.
Oftentimes, there is a misperception that America does not do enough and that Africans do not benefit anything from any kind of engagement with Africans. What Kamala Harris's trip has done is to basically bring to the fore America's involvement on the continent and the extent to which this engagement has been able to benefit the people of Africa. The packages that have been announced during her visit are commendable, are welcome, and they will go a long way in ensuring that the people of Africa continue to appreciate what the United States of America's engagement entails.
In each of the countries she visited, Harris advocated for increasing the role of women in economic and political life. Ruth K. Kangwa is the founder of Girls Gone Political, a group that aims to increase young women's participation in politics in Zambia. She is pleased with the promise of U.S. funds for promoting gender equality in politics and women empowerment in Zambia, where there is low representation of women in leadership.
This particular visit has been one of the most inspirational. We have been taught to dare to dream. Having to see the pronouncement and the bilateral talks that Vice President Kamala Harris had with President Hakainde Hichilema, we were able to see that the U.S. government will continue to support Zambia, and more especially in the governance support and an allocation for women in politics, women's empowerment. And this is very key and exciting at a great time.
Landa Mulima Sodala is a 30-year-old politician.
We have a few female leaders around the world, and she is the very first female to have won the office of the vice president in the USA. The fact that she is here made me realize that there is so much we ladies can achieve, and it's high time we stopped limiting ourselves, just like she mentioned as she was greeting us. I was amazed at how confident she is, how she carries herself. Meeting her personally made me feel so privileged and just ignited this fire in me wanting to achieve more. I will surely be like her one day.
Some political analysts on the continent say the U.S. administration must ensure that Harris' visit and the planned visit by President Biden later this year balance national and continental priorities and result in long-lasting relationships that will help both partners thrive. Kathy Short for VOA News, Lusaka, Zambia.
Kenyan opposition leader Raila Odinga said on Sunday that he was suspending anti-government protests temporarily and is ready for talks after an appeal from President William Ruto. Odinga warned, however, that protests would resume if the government does not resolve the issues.
We have met and listened to a diverse group of Kenyans, including religious leaders from all faiths, about the crisis facing our country today. They have implored us to give dialogue, especially during these holy periods of Easter and Ramadan. It is in this context that we make this counter offer to Hon Ruto's call for dialogue. Mr. Ruto has asked me and Azimio to enter into a constitutional, open-ended, and binding dialogue with his government to find a resolution to the issues that we in Azimio have raised about the last year's election. As leaders, it is our responsibility in Azimio La Umoja to save this country from the catastrophe.
That was Kenyan opposition leader Raila Odinga. Earlier Sunday, President Ruto addressed the nation live on television. This was the first time he has done so publicly since nationwide protests began over the high cost of living and alleged election irregularities. Thousands have attended the protests that began March 20th and were organized by opposition leader Raila Odinga. Ruto pleaded for Odinga to call off the protest scheduled for today, Monday, and said a bipartisan parliamentary committee would explore possible reforms to electoral procedures, but he ruled out striking an alliance of any kind with his foe.
We all have an obligation to respect the Constitution of Kenya. This also includes the respect of institutions established and created by the Constitution. Our country's electoral system and process is anchored on the principles of our Constitution. Nevertheless, I have carefully listened to the issues raised by my friend, the Honorable Raila Odinga. In times like this, it is not about who is right or who is wrong. Like Winston Churchill said, and I dare say, and I quote, courage is what it takes to stand up and speak, but it is also what it takes to sit down and listen. I have always been ready to engage Kenyans of all walks of life, including elected and appointed leaders from across the political divide and the religious fraternity, on how to make our country better and prosperous. And in the last 6 months, I have talked to many religious leaders. I have talked to many elected leaders from across
the political divide. My door still remains open for honest, objective, and sincere deliberations based on the rule of law and the Constitution.
That was Kenyan President William Ruto speaking Sunday to the nation. Voter registration for Liberia's presidential and legislative elections on October 10 this year is underway, but some say the biometric voter registration or BVR process is beset by problems, including a lack of adequate training kits, staff, and verification. As a result, some are demanding an extension of the procedure beyond the May 11th deadline. However, Commission Chairperson Devi Etta Brown-Lansana says the Commission is happy with the registration process despite some challenges. She also tells me that the Commission does not intend to extend registration, at least during the first phase.
I think the voter registration is going well. Despite some glitches and challenges that the Commission is facing in the field, we are happy that Liberians are exercising a lot of patience with this new biometric technology being introduced in our voter registration process. So we are on top of it, trying to mitigate some of the challenges and the few problems that we're having. But on a daily basis, we are indeed registering a lot of Liberians 18 years old and above.
So, Madam Chairperson, you talk about glitches and some problems. Some people cite the lack of enough training kits and staff to carry on the process. Are you referring to those?
I wouldn't call those glitches. My reference to us having glitches have to do with where we've observed that sometimes the staff that we have trained are anxious, you know, because of a lot of people around them, you know, who have come to register. And so they press a button that not necessarily is the command that they want to give. We've also experienced that some of the staff forgot to ensure that, you know, the machines are plugged in properly, or if you have issues with power, and, you know, to ensure that, first of all, you want to be sure that all your plugs are in. And then perhaps maybe the solar panels, you know, should be facing the sun to get the kind of power you need to power the machines. So these are some of the glitches that we're talking about, not necessarily what you've just explained.
I was at an event where I heard someone who had just returned from Liberia. He said after he registered, he said the process lacks verification of the people registering to vote. How do you verify the information of the people voting? That's what he said. It lacks verification.
I wouldn't know what he's talking about with respect to verification. What I do know is that we are registering Liberians 18 years and above, and the law, which I cannot quote verbatim now, but in essence says that when a Liberian approaches the registrar and that registrar is not satisfied, you know, whether that person is a Liberian, the registrar has the right to, you know, quiz the person there and to find out, you know, whether in fact they are Liberians. And if they're not satisfied, simply say you have to prove your citizenship or your nationality as a Liberian before, you know, we can go ahead and register you. So that person, again, will have to show proof that they are a Liberian.
So as a result of some of the issues you are encountering or that some people are talking about, they say they are requesting an extension beyond the May 11th deadline.
We say again, we reiterate that there will be no extension of voter registration in phase one. All of the challenges and problems that we have observed, those that we were told by regular Liberians, you know, and stakeholders and actors, we are in the field correcting them on a daily basis. And we, at this point, do not see any reason why we need to make an extension. Making an extension also to of the process would carry us deep into our next phase, because there's a transition between phase one and phase two, where we review all of our processes. We ensure that all the lessons learned, we have put in place a best practice to get the process rolling in phase two. Now, if we lose that time because of extending the voter registration in phase one, this will not augur well for the process in phase two.
Madam Chairperson, it's a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you, James.
Devieta Brown-Lansanand is the chairperson of the National Elections Commission of Liberia. She was speaking with us from the capital, Monrovia. A Sudan expert says he thinks some military generals are holding the country hostage and keeping the country from returning to civilian rule. Suleiman Baldo is the director of Sudan Transparency and Policy Tracker. This after military leaders and Sudan's main pro-democracy group failed over the weekend to sign a political agreement to bring about a civilian government following the October 2021 military coup. Baldo tells me that the military generals are dragging their feet until the last minute.
There is a political deal that has been negotiated by the democratic opposition to the coup d'etat. Is of course one main reason why the military agreed to sit down and negotiate with the civilian opposition, which is requiring the military, all agencies of the military, to exit the political scene and to leave government of Sudan in the hands of civilians in a new phase of the transition to democracy. And that process was supposed to conclude by the signing on April 1st of a final political agreement between the political opposition of the Forces of Freedom and Change and Sudan Armed Forces and the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces. However, the commander of the Sudan Armed Forces, the National Army, is making a condition of putting their signature on the final agreement that the integration of the Rapid Support Forces in the Sudan Armed Forces should take place within the period of the transition, which is of 2 years. And the Rapid Support Forces agrees to be integrated in the army, but it sees that this should happen over a longer period of time. So this is the main difference. In reality, the difference goes much deeper, and it has to do with the political ambitions of the commanders of the army and of the Rapid Support Forces, of Lieutenant General Burhan, therefore, and Lieutenant General Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, known also as Himeti. Both have ambitions to continue, perhaps as retired generals, in the political scene and contest future elections and, thinking along this line. And they are holding the country hostage by dragging their feet at this very last moment before the signature of the final political agreement.
What does that do, therefore? I mean, I see an April 6th. What's the significance of April 6th?
April 6th is the date of one of Sudan's earlier popular uprisings against military rule. That was in 1985 against the military dictatorship of deposed President Jafar al-Nimeri, if you recall. That was 1985. And therefore, all these dates are symbolic in the sense that the April 6th is, in a way, basically evoking the Sudanese commitment to civilian rule and their determination to be governed by civilians through democratic processes, and to reject the constant tradition of the Sudanese army and military security agencies to stage coup d'etat against elected governments. So April 6 has a lot of historic memory in the collective memory of the Sudanese. However, there is already a date that has been missed, which was April 1st for the signature of the final agreement. And I think the army has made it very clear through a statement of its spokesperson that it will not sign on April 6 if the Rapid Support Forces fail to agree to the shorter timeline for integration in the army. And therefore, the army seems to be holding the process hostage to something that it has created.
Suleiman, very nice to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, and nice talking to you.
Suleiman Baldo is the director of Sudan Transparency and Policy Tracker. You're speaking with us from New Jersey. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, April 3rd. And still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. More than 1,000 people fleeing militant attacks in Burkina Faso have sought refuge in Ghana in recent months and are waiting for their official refugee status to be determined. To help, villagers in northern Ghana are donating farmland to a local refugee camp. Senanu Tor reports from Sepalaga, Ghana.
4 years ago, Muhammadu Buhari and his family arrived here in Ghana after fleeing violent extremists in their hometown in neighboring Burkina Faso. They have been joined by another 4,000 Burkinabes over the last 4 years, more than 1,000 coming in the last 6 months alone. Buhari, like other Burkinabes, is seeking asylum.
They are killing so many people in Burkina Faso now. We are no longer safe in our homes. Militants continue to raid our homes without any cause and kill our family members. They just kill us. No provocations, no questions.
Buhari and other Burkinabes are waiting for their refugee status to be determined so they can enter a refugee livelihood program. Until then, they remain asylum seekers and depend largely on donations from the government of Ghana and other aid groups. Sana Anutor for VOA News, Sapelega, Ghana.
It is time now for Daybreak Africa's Pulse. Here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with the draws for the CAF Champions League Africa Elite Club competition, scheduled to be conducted on Wednesday, April 5 in Cairo, Egypt. Title holders Wydad Casablanca of Morocco are among the 8 sides to have confirmed their places. Record holders Al Hakli of Egypt also secured their place in the last 8 following the conclusion of the group stage of the competition on Saturday night. Wydad are joined in the quarters by their compatriots and city rivals Raja Casablanca, who progressed from Group C alongside Tanzanian side Simba SC. Algerian duo of JS Kabylie and Belouizdad also advanced along with Esperance of Tunisia and South African club Mamelodi Sundowns. In boxing news, British-born former heavyweight champion of Nigerian descent, Anthony Joshua, returned to winning ways with a unanimous points decision over Jermaine Franklin in their heavyweight boxing bout at London O2 Arena on Saturday. After 12 rounds, Anthony Joshua was given the win by 118-111, 117-111, and 117-111 on the scorecards of the 3 judges. There were ugly scenes at the end of the bout as the corners and the fighters clashed momentarily and security stepped in to calm the situation. This was the 33-year-old former world heavyweight champion Joshua's first victory since 2020 after successive defeats by Oleksandr Usyk saw the former Olympic champion lose and then fail to regain his global titles.
It's good to be back in the ring after 8 to 9 months out of the ring. It's not good to take that much time out of the ring. You know, if you want to be good at something, you've got to do it consistently. Coach got me in the right position to compete for 12 rounds against someone that wasn't ready to go. Maybe I could have let my hands go a bit more.
In athletics, world record holder Wade Van Niekerk produced his fastest 400 meters run in 6 years to win at the South African Championships in Potchefstroom. The 2016 Olympic champion, who in recent years had spent many months on the sidelines rehabbing from a career-threatening injury, looked to be back to his imperious best as he blazed around one lap of the track in 44.17 seconds. World Under-20 champion Leith Pearly was second in a personal best of 44.80 seconds. The last time the 30-year-old ran faster than these was when he successfully defended his world title in 2017. In rugby news, Kenya Sevens rugby team Shujaa finished last after failing to win a match at the Hong Kong Sevens Series on Sunday. Shujaa lost all their matches at the 8th leg of the 2022-2023 series as they sit deep into the relegation zone with 3 legs left. After Hong Kong, Kenya are still 13th with 30 points, 10 points off the safety 11th position currently occupied by Spain. And that's it for this Monday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good Monday. And that's it for this Monday, April 3rd edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for beginning your week with us. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Barton in Washington, wishing that you will have a great week.